Thank you, AGP. Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Am I coming through? Yes, there we go. Thank you, AGP. Loud and clear. Tuesday, March 28th, regular meeting for the Morro Bay City Council. Before we start anything, I'm going to share with everyone at home and in the audience that we are having extreme technical difficulties with the power. We've had power outages here at this Vets Hall all day. If we lose power, we will need to cancel the meeting as we will not be able to televise it, have lights or anything else that we need. We will tentatively reschedule if that happens tomorrow night, Wednesday, the 29th of March, and we will meet at the community center. Anything to add to that from our city clerk?
We would be continuing the meeting to tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. in the community center. Yes.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay, just a heads up in case we lose power. That's why. They've been trying to address it all day, but we need some work at this building. With that being said, thank you. And we'll start off with a moment of silence. Oh, excuse me. Before we start moment of silence, we'll do a roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Barton.
Here.
Councilmember Edwards.
Here.
Councilmember Ford.
Here.
And Mayor Wixom.
Here. Okay, with that, we'll please take a moment of silence. Thank you. Thank you very much. And if we can do the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Laura, you want to? Oh, Lisa. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. I think this is getting to be a little challenge, each one of these meetings. I think we've had one normal meeting since the first of the year. And thank you all for your patience and support for us transitioning through all these storms. So closed session report from the city attorney.
Good evening, Madam Mayor. No closed session items to report tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeier. And we will move on to mayor council member reports. And I'm going to lead off real quick, if you don't mind, ladies. Thank you. I want to start by reporting a trip that I took on behalf of the city. It was sponsored by the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Cable Liaisons. And we attended Washington, D.C. Week for CMANC, which is California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference. I attended that with our new harbor manager, Ted, and with our public works director, Greg. We had 9 meetings and a conference in 3 days. So we were very busy. And hopefully our visits to our legislatures there will be fruitful. We do have a scheduled visit coming up from one of our senators that's going to be meeting us and talking about our North T Pier and funding that we've applied for. Okay, thank you. We're going to pause with that for a second and find out what our options are.
Mayor.
The two that has the two that was going to be cut off, but now it's going to stay on. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word.
Mayor, would you like to take a brief recess to see if it can be restored?
I can't do sign language, so wait. Brief recess. Yeah, must reset. Here. Recess.
Good argument for others. Good time for our budget to be coming up, right?
Yeah. This is definitely one that needs to be on the.
Oh my God.
Such an ancient. Yeah, such an ancient building. Yeah. Yeah. Better parking.
Much better parking. More centrally located.
Yeah.
All I can do. Yeah, I'll tip marker though for my sign language. Because it's on you, girl. Tip the camera. And out. So we can zoom.
I think that's the.
And they can record. They just can't hear us live. So they can't hear us live. But if they're recording, I think it doesn't happen. Another note.
Wow. I'm assuming everyone knows how to.
That's so sorry. But what they don't have a lot of time, so don't want to do anything. We good to go, Chris, without volume or not? Good to go?
Okay, thank you, everyone. We're going to try and resume again real quick. This is going to, I think, be the night tonight that we're going to do this a lot. So thank you. I had an opportunity to represent us there in Washington, D.C. It was a very educational trip. Also, with my updates, I am the representative for SLOCOG, and nothing exciting to report there. I'm also the liaison for the Planning Commission. I attended their last meeting and enjoyed listening to their historical updates from community members that are sharing stories as we talk about historical zoning ordinances. And then I also sit on the subcommittee for VISTRA. And we met today, actually, Councilmember Edwards and myself, along with the city attorney, just to get an update. And I would share my update with all of you that there is no update. VISTRA has four items that they will need to complete. It looks like most of that won't come till the end of summer, towards the end of the year. And then at that point, obviously, once the EIR is done, it goes out to public for more comments. So there has not been much communication that we've received from them. We do have a meeting scheduled. This will be our third attempt to meet with them this next month. And once we have an opportunity, Councilmember Edwards and myself to meet, we will share with you what we know. But right now there is no information. So with that, I will pass it on to Councilmember Barton.
I had the opportunity a couple weeks ago to tour the Diablo Canyon facility with several other council members from around the county. And I had been there once before when it was under construction many, many years ago. And so it was interesting to see it again as a, you know, operating facility. And on that day, I think they had just gotten word that they would be able to stay open for a while because the original purpose of the tour was to kind of see what's there, what could be repurposed, what would other agencies perhaps be interested in, that kind of thing. Anyway, that was a very, very, very interesting tour. I went to a county meeting last week that had to do with grants that were going to be made to various providers of services for the homeless and other agencies. And it was a kind of a sad meeting in that there was only so much money and way more people, way more providers were in the audience. And so people were feeling not so happy at the end of that meeting, but it was very interesting to see how that's handled at the county level and how many different agencies were represented in this one big room. So those are my two reports.
Thank you, Councilmember Edwards.
Sure. So I was able to attend the REACH organization's economic development roundtable on March 9th. It was one of my first meetings with them at Embassy Suites in San Luis. And the purpose of that meeting was local government and economic development practitioners sharing updates on local communities to give input into county specific. I think I lost my mic. I can speak loud enough. to give input into county specific economic development initiatives and job creation opportunities. It was a round robin type of educational format that was actually very fun. I met quite a few people from other areas of our county. And basically, we dove into the key areas of the organization's focus and trying to build an understanding of the regional initiatives. I think it's important, and I've probably said this before a couple meetings ago, to note that REACH as an organization represents SLO County, Santa Barbara County, and parts of Monterey. Another significant takeaway that I had from that meeting was, although not all those areas of their platform are necessarily focuses of Morro Bay in particular, like, you know, to our city focused, but that most of them represent something that is going on with our region that at some point will have an impact on us economically. And lastly, I wanted to say that it does fit into our current goal right now, as we go into our new goal setting, but that being the sustaining and economic vitality of our community. So it does fit into that. And lastly, REACH is also was originally about looking to seek higher paid, higher wage jobs to our community. And that was because of Diablo closing. So that was their main focus. But what I also took away from this meeting is it's not just about that. It's about encouraging lower level paying jobs, okay, to also move up. So to move up people in terms of you've been at a job, at a medium job for a while, and then to basically encourage that growth up into higher management jobs. And of course, that would affect housing and numerous things that we all have concerns about within our region and our economy and how that's affected. So it was a really great meeting, and I'm looking forward to the one in May.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I just have one quick announcement. I attended the EBAC meeting, as well as our council member Barton, who is also part of that group. The EBAC stands for Estero Bay Alliance of Care. Am I getting that right? I'm like going blank. Anyway, it's a group of individuals and organizations from Morro Bay and Los Osos and the county of SLO that we all get together and discuss issues such as homelessness and low-income individuals who qualify for special services like SNAP and CalFresh, those sorts of things. One of the things that we had a special guest speaker at this last meeting. We had Jana Nichols from, who is the executive director of Five Cities Homeless Coalition. She kind of gave us like a background on how they got from the beginning stages to where they are now, how they have housing units to temporarily house individuals that are in need, and also what other services that they provide are the five cities that encompass that organization, but also beyond its borders. And yeah, it was a really great comprehensive report that she gave, and a lot of insightful information. And that's all I have to report tonight.
Thank you for that. And I'm going to piggyback on that because I've been out of the loop for the last month between being out of town and the last meeting. And the Five Cities Coalition, you're talking about the Cabins for Care, which is a program that they started down there. And I had an opportunity to tour them. And these are people who are already working with caseworkers, and it provides an opportunity for them to live in a small community. They're called pallet homes, and they have a caseworker on site. They have a person, a security person on site 24 hours a day. And these are people who are already moving to transition into housing. So they're just there for a short term. So it is a great program. Thank you. And I think we just lost volume again, but I'm sure everybody can hear. Hopefully. There we go. We're back on again. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our city manager, Mr. Carpenter, for city manager updates. And then we're going to hopefully have enough power to stay on to get a few minutes from each one of the department heads regarding the storm.
Right, Mayor, members of City Council, we've had a great deal of interest in, and inquiries regarding the city's response to the recent storms and flooding. And after discussing this with the mayor, we thought we would show a short video. This was taken by the police department's drone operator. Shows flooding on March 10th. And following that, we'll have the various department heads discuss their preparation and response and next steps associated with the damage that was caused. So we'll start the video. I'll just to cue this up. It's going to start with us looking west. Little Morrow Creek Road is on the left. Silver City RV Park, or mobile home park, is on the right. And we're looking west, and Main Street is at the top of the screen. So you can see the extent of the flooding. You can see the volume in the creek. We're looking east now. And it's gonna pan back to the west. You can see the Main Street Bridge there and how high the water is. We're just about done. So with that, we're going to start with Fire Department Chief McCrane. And there was a question asked about how this area relates to the flood hazard zone. Greg, maybe you can respond to that. When it's your turn, yeah.
Good evening. So leading up into the storm, we start monitoring the forecasted weather. And we start getting briefings from the National Weather Service and County OES on what's predicted. And then we call together our Emergency Operations Center team, and we formulate a plan to discuss what the weather forecast is, what the city resources are. We look at things like the tide levels and the timing of the tide in correlation to what the expected peak rainfalls are. And then we discuss what resources are needed. We start looking at what the planned response for each department is, and we formulate a game plan with trigger points for monitoring the creek levels, determining when roads will be closed, what the trigger points are for that. And then we coordinate at the Emergency Operations Center at the fire station and via text message and email as well. So the entire city team, including Public Works, Fire Department, Harbor, Police, City Administration, we all have representatives in there so that we can make decisions based on what's happening, what we're seeing in real time. And we have personnel out in the field that is currently monitoring and giving us feedback so that we can see real time what's happening. We look at the assessment of the creek levels. We start looking at Little Morrow Creek and as it's coming in by Silver City. And we're watching, there's a remote monitoring station where we can monitor what the creek level is at the bridge. And when we start seeing the creek approaching about the 8-foot mark, we know that we're at risk of flooding into Silver City. The flooding into Silver City starts to happen when that creek reaches about the 8 to 9 foot mark. And it doesn't reach the road at Main Street there until it reaches the 12-foot mark. So that it actually starts flooding into the mobile home park and topping the banks long before it reaches the road there at Main Street. But we have people out there monitoring, giving feedback. What we've done prior to the last storm is we actually sent the fire department staff around into those low-lying areas, knocking on doors at the mobile home park, advising people of the upcoming weather. We had a flyer we were handing out with information, advising them to seek alternate shelter, evacuate beforehand because we had pretty good idea based on the forecasted weather and the tide timing that there was the risk of flooding again, and the National Weather Service did issue a flood warning for our area. So we tried to be really proactive. We also coordinated with police, and I'll let Chief Watkins speak on that, but outreaching to the homeless as well. We look at what the hourly rainfall amounts are and what those flood levels are to help determine if there's that potential for flooding. We went around to Preston, Errol, Main Street, Little Morrow Creek, and both Silver City mobile home parks, try to make contact with all the residents there that are in the known floodplain. We do frequent patrols of the areas just to look for signs of flooding, and so we can be proactive and try to make sure people are out of that path and not have to be rescued. One of the things that we really looked at was pre-staging fire equipment. We stage an engine up on Radcliffe. That way, if it was cut off again, we had an engine that could cover that portion of town and not have to travel through the deep water if there was a fire or some type of emergency over on that portion of town. And in the January storm and in the last couple storms, we staged an engine over at our second fire station, which is unstaffed, but we did move a crew over there and set up cots in the apparatus bay so that they had a place to go. And we had an engine on the north end of town because when the highway flooded, we wouldn't have been able to get across. So we preemptively moved an apparatus across to that side. Yeah, we had crews that were during the storms when the highway was closed, we moved them over there and they were able to go to some department members' houses in that area and at least have access for food and showers, and be able to provide service to the North Morro Bay residents without interruption because the highway was closed. We also coordinated with San Luis Ambulance and made sure that they had a four-wheel drive ambulance pre-staged. They moved one into San Luis Obispo so that it could respond into Morro Bay or it could respond up the highway, Highway 101 north into the North County if needed. So that way we'd be able to transport patients through the heavy waters and out to a hospital if needed. We did also coordinate with PG&E for the substation to make sure that they had their pumping equipment in place and we wouldn't need to commit resources to the substation again like we did in the January storm. So we took the lessons from the January storm, applied those for subsequent responses, and tried to ensure that there weren't any areas that were lacking coverage or any areas we couldn't provide service to. Yeah.
On the police side, obviously with our EOC participation, we have two key responsibilities to aid in the community outreach. One is our homeless outreach and care during these inclement weather situations. What we do on a routine basis is we contact unhoused population and advise of the coming storm. We've done that for years with personnel walking down on foot. We also have our drone that can actually represent a public announcement, and it will broadcast information across a large area to our unhoused population, just letting them know of the pending storm and the potential for flooding. We provide options for shelters and or other placements. One of the things we do this storm was our homeless outreach case manager, Jason Holland, was out with law enforcement officers, making sure that anyone who desired to leave an unhoused population or an unhoused location that was dangerous or uncomfortable for them, that we were there to make sure that they had the needs to be placed either in Prado, which is our immediate shelter location. We offered transportation by bus passes. We passed out 20 bus passes to locations with shelters. We had visits from the county public health nurse on three separate occasions throughout the storm preparation. We had representatives from TEMA that provided snacks, emergency blankets, socks, Narcan, and other mental health services. We provided shelter options once again. We had both options available for Prado and then the Red Cross shelter that ended up taking place at Cal Poly on the second storm. First storm in January, second storm, it was at Red Cross shelter at Cal Poly. And then this final storm, the warming shelter was at the Vets Hall in San Luis Obispo. We coordinated with other agencies to provide tarps and trash bags. We'd reach out and anybody who was seeking a tarp, they were able to come to the police department and pick up one of those, courtesy of Salvation Army. We worked closely with Public Works to clean up and some contract agencies to clean up some debris after the storms to make sure that we didn't have any backup from debris along our Quintana Creek area. And I just wanted to mention that during this last storm, after this being our third round, during this last storm, the creek encampment was empty during this final storm, thanks to the outreach, thanks to the people who were finally willing to seek those services or seek those opportunities to seek higher ground or shelter. Another responsibility, key responsibility in the police department is monitoring and making sure that we are aware of the pending road closures. One of the things that we experienced in January that we learned from was to communicate ahead of time with Caltrans and to encourage their presence here. Certainly during those storms, it was a lot easier the next two storms because they saw the impact that Highway 1 took during the flooding with the creek. So our second and third storm, we had Caltrans here on scene. We did have to close Highway 1 on the second storm. And we did that fairly quickly with assistance from police personnel. During times like these, it's very difficult. CHP is understaffed and is usually along some of the higher traveling roads. So the police department ends up taking under our responsibility the highway closures. We did a lot of preparation with cone placement so that closure could be immediate, but then also on the reverse side of that, opening can be immediate. It took us a lot less time on this final storm to reopen the highway, which is obviously beneficial to everyone in our community, because Main Street continued to be closed and Highway 1 was our thoroughfare from north to south. We continue to monitor certainly South Bay Boulevard as well as Quintana. One of the things that our drone pilot identified in the January storm was the levee break that exists in the county on private property. That's one of the things that continues to flood our South Bay and Quintana area. So we continue to monitor that with our drone as well as our officers 24 hours a day. So those were some of our key responsibilities as far as the police department was concerned during these last two storms.
So the primary responsibility for the harbor is going to ensure that the waterfront and the harbor is safe to the general public and to the boating public, and that's our primary responsibility. Prior to the storm, we make certain that we're fully staffed with four officers, and every night we ensure that we have two officers on duty, on site, available to respond to any emergency. Our staff is looking initially at the storm direction, the tide, surf conditions, and the wind direction, and that's going to tell us a lot about how we need to respond and what kind of damage we might expect within the harbor. Just prior to the storm event, our staff will be checking docks and the moorings. They're going to make certain that vessels are tied securely to all of the docks. They're going to be looking for any items that might be stored on decks that aren't secured. They'll do a pre-inspection of the beaches and the creek. And then during the storm, pending the conditions, and if it's safe, they'll do several tours of the inner harbor to make certain no vessels have broke loose, nobody stranded, no floating debris that could cause additional damage. And they'll do that multiple times during the storm event. After the storm has passed, staff is going to go back through the harbor and look for any damage to vessels. Again, you know, looking for moorings that may have broke loose, any debris that might be floating, remove that from the floating from the harbor. They're going to check the beaches and the creek to make certain that there hasn't been any significant damage or any issues regarding those areas. And that's our primary role. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. For Public Works, we do a lot of prep work before the storm. So when we know a big storm is coming, the first thing we do is jet out some of the drop inlets around Main Street, over there by where the businesses were flooded. We want to make sure that when possible, the water is flowing into those inlets and then back into the creek. Of course, once the creek is high and there's high velocity in the creek, those storm drains are not as effective because you're essentially channeling a small amount of water into a quick moving creek. But they are effective if there's just some rain. But we do clean out those storm drains. We also stage signage for the police department and the fire department. No pass-through signs for roads that are going to be closed. And one lesson learned from the January storms is that we should stage an excavator on the Main Street Bridge or near the Main Street Bridge. So if it looks like there's some blockages happening at the Main Street Bridge, we can get them out quickly. We were able to get out some blockages on the January 9th storm, but it took some effort and scrambling to get an excavator out there in the middle of the storm. Whereas this time around on March 10th, we had that ready to go. Public Works also goes around and monitors the creeks and looks for issues, potential blockages, and we remove them if we see them, if they're in the city right of way. We also look around and see if we find any evidence of landslides. Luckily, we haven't seen too much of that around town. And then after the storm is where a lot of our work kicks in. So we're responsible for debris cleanup I didn't hear that one. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, can you just
stop? Does that mean I need to stop?
Nope.
Okay.
Who's back on?
Okay, thank you. So a lot of Public Works job kicks in after the storm leaves because we are responsible for the debris cleanup, And this time around on the March 10th storm, we did have contractors on standby so that we had a more immediate response. There are a lot of challenges to cleaning up the debris on Preston Lane, Errol Street, and Main Street. Some of those roads are not in great condition, which make it very difficult for a skip and drag to do a scraping because the roads are so bumpy. But we do the best we can, and we've also been cleaning off the streets. And we have a meeting with the business owners down on Preston Lane, for example, this Thursday, to address concerns there. We also fix roads that deteriorate as a result of the storm. On January 9th, we saw that South Bay Boulevard was undermined in the city right-of-way, and so we responded to that quickly and had that open within a day. And then we're involved in a lot of next steps that happen after the storms. So we are leading the FEMA process, the public assistance grant, so that we can get reimbursed for a lot of the post-storm debris cleanup that we've done. We're also looking at hazard mitigation funds to be applied to projects that would help prevent some of the flooding in the future. And also, we're looking at doing some community education, particularly in the floodplain that is Errol Street and Preston Lane and Main Street. I think it was very eye-opening for us to watch the drone footage that we all just saw. And it shows pretty clearly that the flooding happens upstream of the Main Street Bridge. I think we lost video. Just keep going. Okay. And so that flooding is really important because that is how Preston Lane gets flooded. That is how Silver City Mobile Home Park and Silver City West get flooded. And actually, after it floods those areas, it goes back into the creek. And so that's a situation that we really have to look at as a city and as a community to see what we could do to prevent those kinds of flooding events in the future. That will likely take some time to do and some analysis by a hydrologist to give us recommendations on what sorts of adaptations we can make in the creek or interim measures. I also want to make two other points. One, we got a little lucky on the March 10th storm because we didn't have the same level of tidal influence that we had on the January 9th storm. What we saw on January 9th was a king tide coming in and basically boxing with the high creek at Morrow Creek. And then that slows down the creek, which means it backs up further and the levels rise further. We didn't have that as much on March 10th. But that is a consideration when we look at these storms, and it will help us to forecast a bit internally kind of what response we need based on not just the weather forecast, but also the tides. And then the FEMA flood map that someone mentioned for the 100-year storms matches pretty closely to what we saw, particularly along South Bay Boulevard, Quintana Road, and Main Street, Errol Street, and Preston Lane. If you are interested in seeing that FEMA flood map, a quick way to find it is to go into Plan Morrow Bay. That's the general plan that was approved in 2021. I'm looking at it now, and it shows the FEMA 100-year flood map and the 500-year flood map. And again, you can see that it shows Main Street flooding. It shows Highway 1 flooding. And so that's really good information for the community to have for anyone interested. That's it.
Mayor, that concludes staff's presentation on this item. I think, as you heard, we've well, first of all, I think staff should be commended for their response, learning from the January event and then responding during the March event and then all the hours they put in. The impact is going to be fairly long lasting. It is going to affect your work effort and your budget for next year. And as you heard, there is going to be a significant effort to recoup costs that we've already expended, as well as look for ways of getting mitigation funds to prevent future damage. And that's going to be a major focus of staff this upcoming year.
Thank you very much. I just want to, and I know all of us have had an opportunity to be up at City Hall and up at the fire department over the last few months with these storms, and not just those department heads that talked tonight, but all of the staff, the city clerk, the assistant city manager, Community Development Director. It has been an entire team. It is a team, and they're leading this team, and they've done an awesome job. And I know Mr. Carpenter stepped into it, and Ms. Johnson Rios held us over in the meantime and got a little bit of the flood too. So thank you to all of you and to all of the staff members throughout the city, to all the harbor. They've been down there on the water too. And it does take a team. So thank you. I really appreciate it. I know all of us as residents do too. So thank you. Huge shout out. I'm going to remind everyone who has an opportunity to actually be listening right now that we are struggling with power here at the Vets Hall. If we lose power, volume, other things like that, we will have to stop the meeting, and we will look at reconvening meeting tomorrow night at the community center, and we'll announce it on our website as well as any other way we can facilitate that. So just a heads up. It's not AGP, it's the buildings breakers that are going out. So want to let you all know that. Okay, with that, we have a presentation this evening from San Luis Obispo Council of Governments on our 2023 Regional Transportation Plan. Good evening, thank you.
Are you in the room here with a PowerPoint? Maybe that'll set off a glitch that we don't want to shut down the room. But if it works, fine. If not, I'll just be brief. And okay, it looks like we're working. So my name is Richard Murphy. I work with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. We're grateful to have the mayor as a new representative on the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. We are a 12-member entity of local elected officials, the five county board of supervisors, and a representative from each of the seven cities. And you can just go ahead and go to the next slide. That's great. And this is a discussion tonight about a 20-year transportation plan and the policy decisions that go around the choices that are made to make our investments over the course of 20 years. And so I just wanted to also highlight, if you could, and there's the government code, what outlines our responsibility and requirement, but you can go to the next slide. And in this is, I guess we're jumping pretty quick here. So that's fine. Very fine. Our primary responsibility as this regional transportation planning agency is focused on planning and funding for transportation. And as you all know, we've been a partner with the City of Morro Bay over the several years since our inception. Most recently, we've been a partner with your project of the roundabout up on Morro Bay Boulevard and Quintana, as well as the high school bike path along and adjacent to Highway 1. Currently, with the transit center here downtown, there's been some improvements that are underway. Also, we are working with the city on operational improvements at Main Street and 41, and also a connecting active transportation projects between Morro Bay and Cayucas, known as the Morro Bay to Cayucas Connector. So those are some of the current near-term activities that we're involved in with the city. But this long-range plan is an opportunity for all agencies and all representatives and all constituents to comment on this 20-year document. The process on the next slide demonstrates that our planning efforts are focused on being in alignment with your local plans, as well as state and federal efforts that are underway with respect to tracking vehicle miles traveled and making certain that our investments are considering some of these new policy shifts in the state house as it relates to greenhouse gas emission reductions and the like. As we all know, there's a lot of new federal programs that are out there that is a result of the current administration in Washington, D.C. And so our focus is to identify all these opportunities and prioritize where we're able, where these investments should be made. We've done a considerable amount of outreach over the course of the last 2 years as we update this plan. This planning document is updated every 4 years. This outlines some of the methods. We've done online surveys. We've done number of different tools that are available online that if folks are interested in this kind of thing, they can still get out there and use these tools. Our advisory committees and steering committees have been very active in the process. And of course, the SLOCOG board has been monitoring the development of the document throughout the process. And now we have a public review draft available for input officially. And we can go to the next slide. The document consists of four very distinct components. There's a policy section, a financial section, an action element section, and what we call a sustainable community strategy. And if you wouldn't mind going to the next slide, Don. The policy element establishes and sets the goals. These are the basic pillars in which we are setting our policies around. And it's from these goals we develop our policies that we put into motion that help us prioritize our regional investments. And to the next slide, what you'll see here is under the financial element, some of the assumptions that are made over the next 20 years of where the funding is coming from. And it sounds like a considerable amount of money, $3.1 billion of compilation of federal and state resources, as well as local resources from either development fees and or local taxes that come together to create this investment pot of resources over the 23-year time horizon of this plan, which takes us out to 2045. And through the process, we conduct a number of surveys, as I said earlier, and the needs assessment that's established. And you can see on the plan that we have revenues that are projected, needs that are defined, and then in this case, there's some hard choices that are made, deficit in funding. That's just sort of the nature of what the planning document is. There's a constrained section, and then there's an unconstrained section. And so with that, we have $2.3 billion of infrastructure that we're saying is not fundable, where we are indicating we have $3 billion of infrastructure that is fundable. The next slide. This is identified just to demonstrate that even though, yes, we are a regional transportation agency, yes, we have authority to and have discretion on where some of the federal and state funds are invested, but why it's showing zero under regional is just to demonstrate that we're not quite like our sister agencies to the north and south that do the same thing as we do. There are 25 counties in the state of California that are recognized as self-help counties. In this case, on the Central Coast, Santa Barbara, Monterey, Santa Cruz are all self-help counties, meaning they have a regional dedicated sales tax for transportation to help them with their transportation investments. It serves for their agency purposes. It gives them the ability to leverage other state and federal monies. It also gives them the ability to advance infrastructure needs sooner than later, thereby bringing the cost down because of inflationary reasons. So this was a point that the folks that are really responsible in developing the document wanted to make, that we have this element in the document that is a zero as it relates to regional sales tax. And then there is a nice working tool online for folks in the audience or anyone here that in your community that has an interest in getting a sense of the project listings, the project types from active transportation, public transit, your street and road network, the highway system. Of course, we're working closely with Caltrans on these community betterments and larger infrastructure needs. And they're all mapped nicely online. They're all part of the document. Your input is very welcome in that. We work closely with Greg and his staff on these issues, where Greg and his staff sit on our technical advisory committee. So they're familiar with our process and our planning activities. And I'm sure if Greg is unable to answer a question, you're welcome to contact us directly to answer any questions. You can go to the next slide. I believe that's pretty much the wrap on it. Just using this as an opportunity, and thank you for rescheduling us 2 weeks later from the challenges you had here in the area with the highway closed from the last meeting, and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you for coming back. I apologize for that, no control. Any questions from council members before he sits down?
I'd like to ask one question. I wasn't writing fast enough. What was the last through 2045? What was that last number, the dollars?
The revenue that's assumed, reasonably expected revenue, is $3.1 billion for the county, the cities, the unincorporated communities. The need of infrastructure that has been documented in the plan is 5.1 billion, I think it was.
5.4. Yeah.
And so the shortfall is $2 billion over 23
Thank
years.
Thank you.
I have a question. What are the other communities that you were referencing? What do they charge? What is the sales tax? Is that how it's done, the assessment?
Well, these other counties, not in San Luis Obispo County, a lot of our partners, the local agencies, have their own general purpose sales tax, which in many ways functions as it's a general purpose tax based on the priorities of each respective council that sets a general purpose tax. In these other counties that have a regional sales tax dedicated for transportation, it's in the neighborhood of a half a cent added to their sales tax.
Through the quarter, whole, their
typically
whole county?
A quarter to a half. Some of them have sunset, some of them are in perpetuity.
For the whole county?
For the entire county. Affects all jurisdictions.
And then is the transportation use the same as, you know, consistent as it's always been? Are the same amount of people taking public transportation?
There are clearly new trends post-COVID. A lot of folks able to work from home or telecommuting part-time during the week. There are definitely some shifts. You can see it on the on Route 12, which I take off from the coast back to into town for work. There are shifts. And staying ahead of that and knowing how those trend lines, ultimately play out 10, 15, 20 years is a challenge. But clearly COVID had an impact on people's behaviors with respect to where they work and how they get to work.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you so much.
And with that, we will move on to public comment. I do have some speaker slips I'll start with. And first up is going to be Homer Alexander, followed by Rachel Wilson.
My name is Homer Alexander. For the sake of the high school kids and my dogs, I would appreciate it if you could use your influence to get the bike path reopened before somebody gets hurt. If you need some money to get the work done, there's unbudgeted funds in Measure Q&E. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rachel Wilson. I'm from Cayucas, California. And Morro Bay shares something that Los Angeles International Airport had. Imagine Los Angeles International Airport at one time was California's best estuary. And let's see what happened to it. So I'm not sure, do I have any slides? They didn't come through. All right, so what I was gonna talk about today is both the best plant and the waterfront. And Morro Bay really has a choice right now. If you look at the BOEM plan, there are two places that are up for operations and maintenance facilities. One of them is Morro Bay, a world-renowned estuary. The other is Port Hueneme, an industrial port. It is already designed to take the operations and maintenance facility. It is an industrial port. It can never become a world-class estuary. We are a world-class estuary, one of very few remaining. So we have a choice in Morro Bay. We can keep our world-class estuary. Los Angeles International Airport, they can't get back their world-class estuary. Long Beach cannot get back their world-class estuary. But there's a way that we can prevent losing our world-class estuary. And that is encouraging the California Lands Commission and the BOEM to put the operations and maintenance facility at Port Hueneme. That's the green choice. It's already an industrial port. It's one of two still in the running. The other is the best plant. That can be any place. But imagine right now, Morro Bay looking like Los Angeles International Airport, covered over by parking lots, covered over by buildings that are not tourist related. Imagine what that would do not only to our wildlife, but to our tourist industry. How many of you guys would choose to go spend the weekend next to Los Angeles International Airport or the Port of Long Beach? If you look at the Port of Long Beach, Port Hueneme, there aren't any decent restaurants. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Sharon O'Leary, followed by Aaron Oaks.
Good evening. My name is Sharon O'Leary. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. Mayor, City Council, staff, thank you. Thank you for mentioning EBAC earlier. EBAC just went through its 115th meeting. We've been meeting monthly for 10 years, bringing all the active agencies in our area together as we address homelessness and folks in need in our community. The Community Resource Connections Office, a city service, has been open for 10 years. During that time, we worked towards accumulating mostly really good data to provide to the city and gauge what we needed to do by way of outreach. So we brought case management into community dinner and food bank lines of people about 5 or 6 years ago. And presently, every Monday, we have community case management through CAPSLO, often with TEMA. And we have a public health representative as well. And we bring other interested groups in to help support us. So I'm looking forward to goal planning next Wednesday. We've taken a look at what we would need by way of safe parking. Safe parking is the trademark name for the City of Santa Barbara's program. So we would call it secured parking. What it would take to develop that in Morro Bay, which would be contracting to a company to come in and suggest a model and either go with it or amend it and change it or not. The same kind of thing with the warming shelter cooling station. We got a good look at the what was set up by the Red Cross during the flooding, which was quite remarkable to see what it takes to put together a warming shelter. And again, it would be contracting with a company that would provide that service. And again, taking a look at some model that would be adjusted for Morro Bay. So thank you. And I'll attend goal setting next week and hope to get some interest about those two programs for Morro Bay. Thank you.
Good evening, members of the council and staff. My name is Aaron Oaks of Morro Bay. Morro Bay is at the crossroads of innovation and extinction. The proposed offshore wind farm promises to provide green, clean energy and innovation, but at what cost? Our marine wildlife and unique ecosystem, the commercial fishing community, our tourism economy, our lifeblood, everything that held our city together since we incorporated as a city in 1964. Generations of families have lived and thrived in Morro Bay as a result of decades-long access to fishing grounds. But for the past 50 years, their access was slowly chipped away. The proposed offshore wind farm will encompass 376 square miles, which is the equivalent of 181,984 football fields. what will become of the fishermen in Morro Bay? What will become of our residents who rely on tourism revenue to keep city-related bills at somewhat reasonable rates? Does the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, the agency responsible for awarding offshore wind leases, understand the extent of what we could lose? No. The proposed battery storage facility promises to be the world's first of its size and scope, providing green energy to help our environment, but at what cost? Our environment, our health and safety, our national security, our ability to properly evacuate should something go awry? No signal? Vistra Energy made a purposeful choice to impose their proposed project on us without asking the community first if we would be interested or what trade-offs would we be willing to make. They come to our city not as partners, but as predatory special interests dictating what green should mean to us. When they realized the winds of public opinion were not blowing their direction, Vistra started to lobby the State Lands Commission, and they started threatening members of our community into silence. That's neither green nor consensual. Morro Bay strives to innovate, but not at Morro Bay's expense, and not at the cost of our extinction. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. Next up is Margaret Carmen and Michael Wombat. Thank you. Wumble.
Hello. My name is Margaret Carmen. I'm from Morro Bay. And thank you. The last two people said almost everything. I have not prepared anything. I'm coming up here talking to you from my heart and looking at the five women up here talking to your nurturing female hearts and your critical brains to please do research. We cannot call this energy green. Green is not digging in the ocean floor 21 miles out, putting up wind things. They don't just kill birds. They change the whole wind patterns on the whole coast. They change the wave patterns. They're not green. And we've already talked about how we closed Highway 1. What are we going to do if that lithium battery plant catches on fire? Where are we going to go? You know, we're dealing with these little things of like, where we're going to create some jobs at the expense of what we've just heard. It doesn't add up. And the big thing is what I want you guys to do your own research and not listen to what the green people in the state of California are saying. There is alternative energy that is not damaging to people's environment and their lives. And I just would like to send you guys things and tell you about that. And I'm going to give you an example from something I was involved with back when we were going to get smart meters on their house. PG&E said, oh, look, we're going to get smart meters and we're going to save energy. They don't save energy. They had to take off the old meters. They had to make a new meter, put it on your house. The only way a smart meter saves energy is if you change your behavior patterns. Yes, you can look on the computer and see how much energy you're spending, but I'd like people to raise their hands. How many people have ever done that? You were sold an idea that, not you, but we were, that smart meters saved energy. Now, this is even bigger because this is at the expense of our estuary, our ocean life, all of it. Oh, okay. Okay, thank you for listening to me ramble. I'm done.
Good evening, Mayor. Thank you, Mayor and City Council and staff. Michael Wombold here, Executive Director for Visit Morro Bay. I want to start off by commending staff and everybody through this challenging time of a historic winter that we've had. It's kind of been an amazing response that everybody's had. There's also a unique challenge that we're kind of facing at the moment with the weather patterns and what we've had. Is tourism is down. On the first part of this calendar year, our revenue stream through the TOTN sales tax is down around 20% starting in January. Our board of directors has taken a unique action that I don't think they've been able to take in the past. They approved a $200,000 marketing campaign starting in April and a two-phase program in April and the start of June. For relevance on this, our annual marketing budget is around $450,000. These funds are coming from a carryover fund from last year, which we've been saving up for appropriate times and when we need them. And so I'm excited that our board of directors approved that. Also with that, I would, I'm happy to say that we welcome Sarah Johnson-Rios as our city city person on our board of directors. It was great to have her and just give you some more insight on some work that we've been doing. I just came back from a media mission in Dallas, where Dallas is one of our major flight markets, where we met with 15 different media personalities and independent journalists, where I've seen some traction from there. I also returned from a international tour and travel trade show as well. International tour is one of our staples, typically through summer and then through our fall period. We haven't had that during the COVID period. And we're seeing that response come back, but we're probably going to see international another year, year and a half out in a response for that. But if we don't start our work now in international, Morro Bay can be slipping behind some of our competitive destinations that we're against. And another thing that our board had approved is Tyler Hoyt, from the athletic director from the Morro Bay High School, approached us with a branding sponsorship deal. And so you'll be seeing our logos on the wrestling mats and on the swim windscreen at Morro Bay High School. So when we have tournaments coming in, those traveling not on tourism will be seeing our logos. And as we're serving up ads to them, they're going to get to know us as Morro Bay. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Next up is Erica Crawford and Betsy, got it, Cross.
Good evening, Council. Erica Crawford with the Morro Bay Chamber. I'm going to echo the thank you to the city staff. I'm speaking for the chamber today. I look forward to doing an economic development update, kind of something more comprehensive in the future. But I will say, you know, our members enjoy doing business in a community that values local control and public safety. And I think what you heard today is that value is really there. So thank you so much for all of the work that you did to keep our community safe. Just a few quick updates. We do have a new tab up on our chamber website, which is morrochamber.org, called Business Resources. It's completely built out, permit information, business license information, talking to the city. Tomorrow we have our breakfast program very early at 7:30 in the morning over at the community center. I want to thank our panelists. We're going to be discussing policy creation and implementation. So thank you very much, Mayor Wixom. Thank you very much, City Attorney Chris Neumeier, Assistant CM and Admin Services Director Sarah Johnson-Rios, and our city clerk, Dana Swanson. We got her on a stage. So we're really excited to have you participate tomorrow. And La Katrina is providing breakfast. This is a community event and all are welcome. This is kind of closing out our quarter one focus as an organization on community engagement and facts. Facts matter. We want people from the community to be able to come in and engage and get facts. So thanks again to Public Works and Community Development for participating in this series. We're gearing up for Big Spring. We transition our focus for quarter two to a theme of sort of gearing up for the busy season. So we have more public-facing events coming up. We have the Shop Sip and Stroll, two dates in April. This event series aims to get Slo County and Morro Bay locals into local businesses midweek and before the high season to kind of boost sales and get kind of shake out the cobwebs and get ready for a high season. And then finally, we have our annual Community Awards Gala that's scheduled on April 21st. This is, again, featuring local businesses. The public is invited. All of these events are searchable on morrochamber.org. That's it. Thank you very much.
My name is Betsy Gaudette Cross. I'm here again with a couple of things that I'd like to get off my chest. None of you know me, but if you did, you know I'm the queen of saving the planet. I have always been working on minimizing my carbon footprint. I've been saving and recycling in my classroom before they had recycling bins and on campus. I have a watering can in my kitchen sink and a bucket in my shower. And I have since the 70s when I lived in Marin County and we had a major drought. I've a conservative driver so I can save gas. I reuse my Ziploc bags if they're not too bad. I have a compost bin in my kitchen. I had solar panels on my old house when I lived in the valley. I could go on and on. So when somebody accuses me of not wanting green energy, I get really angry because I have been doing my bit for as long as I've been an adult. And I don't think that many people can say that. Next, when the BESS project goes, I have a question. When is the BESS project going to be on our agenda so we can ask questions and you can answer questions? I think this has been asked to be put on the agenda before. And, you know, I'd love to hear everybody's thoughts, not just ours. And lastly, do you even care what the people of Morro Bay want? Have you listened to the people at city council meetings? Have you seen the signs around town? Have you been reading the posts on Nextdoor and Facebook? I've been talking to anyone who will listen to me, and not one person has said, oh yeah, I think that's a great idea and you're crazy because, you know, I'd have it in my backyard. No, nobody has said that. Nobody wants the thought of a humongous dock that would be servicing the windmills that would change the whole ecosystem of our cute little fishing village. If these things happen, it's just going to change our whole town. And there has to be another way of generating revenue. Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, public comment is open to those of you who have not done speaker slips. So please come on up.
My name's Natalia Merzoyan, and I'm speaking concerning the wind farm and BESS because they kind of go hand in glove, and I'm throwing out some thoughts I have on them. I'll start at the end, which is something that always bothers me. When we have government dealing out these situations, Diablo Canyon, the Morro Bay power plant, whatever it is, they have this great thing going and there's never a conclusion to it that fits the community. And I would like, if you all are on board with this, which I hope you're not, that there's some determination about the eventual decommissioning of that ghastly wind farm once it's put in there, because who in God's name is going to pay to decommission it? Certainly not the people here, I hope. But I just can't believe that our government has done this to us. It's shocking and dreadful. The more I hear about it, the less utilitarian and economical it is, and the less green it is. There was a program on hearings that they had on the New Jersey shore and what's happening there with all the whale deaths and all that stuff going on. And I hope you all watch it because it's shocking. And I guess I would like to address this mostly to Jen Ford, because I'd like to think that she could have some influence with Don Addis, who might be able to make a difference in this somehow, letting people know Morro Bay does not want this whole mess to happen. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Terry Simons. First of all, let me say I really love the collected update on the recent storm and the previous storms done by staff. it would have been nice if that had been agendized so that I could have brought materials with me to speak to some of the points that listening to the discussion that I didn't know was coming. So I'll just have to tell you what I heard. The thing that I heard and at the question that I asked was related to FEMA mapping. In some recent project work that I've been doing along Quintana, I've discovered that the Plan Morro Bay FEMA overlay section, which our public works director referred to that he was looking at, is hideously out of date. It actually shows the drainage basin that followed the old creek way in the same location that it was in 1950s before the highway was built. So you'll see in the overlay map that the FEMA map basically runs about 40 feet above Quintana Road at the elevation of the existing highway, which is of course not correct. I don't know how many other technical errors there are like that on the FEMA map as a whole, because I've only been looking at portions of it. But I will tell you that I've been very interested in the flooding that's happened along Main Street. And an interesting point of perspective is to stand on the Main Street Bridge, which was historically Highway 1. That undercrossing was engineered back in the day and in anticipation of floods, very much like we just experienced coming down Morro Creek. It's remarkably lower than the new crossings over the creek that were developed in the 60s with the building of the new Highway 1, probably 4 or 5 feet lower. And then I hear tonight that the flood elevation that's flooding the mobile home parks and stuff is actually below the Main Street Bridge, which is concerning. This is just something that I think we need to look at going forward. I know that in jurisdictions, primarily on the East Coast, that FEMA has sponsored tremendous amounts of money to decommission portions of communities that are in floodplains, and that maybe that money is available to us to basically take those at-risk properties out of circulation, or maybe phase them to raise them to the flood level. This is something planning should be looking at. I don't know whether there is a floodplain overlay in the general plan in that area that requires those properties to basically raise their elevations on redevelopment. I know that the nursery at Miners, which was built relatively recently, went underwater. And certainly that must have been evaluated from a FEMA perspective. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Council. Judy Setting.
Talk louder.
Okay, I'll try. Well, I do want to say that we have had our solar panels for a couple months now, and I'm thrilled. And I think it would be a grand idea to invest in helping everybody in Morro Bay get solar panels. And I think it would be easier on our beautiful estuary, our wildlife, everything, if we did that in lieu of a dock that invites 300 to 400 foot ships to come in and out of our harbor on a regular basis and completely disrupt our recreational boating and our children who take off on stand up paddle boards and head across to the sand spit for a day of play. Anyway, I think it'd be a good idea. I also wanted to say that a while back, I heard a meeting where Supervisor Gibson talked of Morro Bay being a port, and Rachel spoke to this. You know, we're being considered and Port Hueneme right now. And I referred to what I heard him say as him throwing us under the bus. I just found out that he said he has not thrown us under the bus. Our former mayor, Don Addis, Laurel, possibly you, Cindy worked on the reach as a chamber member, and promoted us stepping forward to be considered in this whole project. And I may be wrong, but I thought at a council a couple weeks ago, you said something about that. Anyway, Supervisor Gibson suggested that, you know, maybe you need to let the county know that the citizens of Morro Bay are not for this. And I'm hoping that Don Addis isn't telling the state now that we are for this, because we're not for this. We're for keeping Morro Bay a rare, beautiful, natural place for visitors all over the world to come and enjoy. And if I've misstated anything, Cindy, I hope you'll correct me. I thought that you said that you worked as part of the committee for REACH. And anyway, you can correct me. So I just hope that somehow you all will help us get the word out that this, we much rather have solar panels, and we much rather get our little electric vehicles and use our solar panels to charge them up. So thank you. And I loved everything Betsy said about how we personally lower our footprint. Morro Bay started doing that with the first farmers market way back in the 80s. We wanted to buy local. We wanted non-processed foods, because it lowers our footprint if we buy local homegrown things and cook them ourselves. And anyway, thank you.
Is this not working? No?
Okay, I'll just speak loudly. I think you'll be able to hear me. I can speak pretty loud. My name is Nicole Dorfman. I live here in Morro Bay, and you know, I want to thank the people who came before me talking about the wind farms and the BESS. And we all know, if we've looked into it, these are not green projects. All you need to do is take a look at the strip mining in the Congo and the child labor that goes into extracting the cobalt that's required for the lithium ion. It broke my heart to see what we're doing and the scale that it would need to be pumped up to achieve what they're proposing. Not only that, it is a hazard to our community. And what we're seeing now, we're talking about this flooding. And from what I understand, we're expecting more extreme weather due to climate change. So maybe we're going to be flooded every year. Maybe it's going to get worse. I don't know. Nobody can say. But we do know that the lithium ion batteries do not react well with water, particularly salt water. They create hazardous toxic fumes to people and to animals. And I think that what the last speaker just said is, from the council as our representatives and all the people here, Erica Stewart with the chamber. I've read through some of the documents for REACH. And Cindy Edwards was not on the committee. I believe that Mayor Hedding, Councilwoman Ford were the representatives, as well as Eric Endersby, our previous harbor director. Erica Stewart was also on that commission. And some of the writings, and I've just read one from the previous mayor, we are so excited to be a part of this, and we want to encourage it, and we want to be a part of it. And I don't know where he got that message from. And I don't think it was from the people. Perhaps industry is very much in favor, because they're seeing the money. We're seeing our beautiful home being taken over by actually international actors. Vistra, for example, has big coal plants in Texas. They're one of the biggest polluters in Texas. They're trying to rebrand themselves. And they're using Morro Bay to put on a green face. I call it greenwashing. But we're hoping that you five electeds will now say, hey, we don't support this in our community. And somebody else mentioned another port that was, I forget the name of it. Why? Yes, thank you. But if that's already industrialized, that's wonderful. Then it should go there. We don't want that. It's not good for our town. It's not good for our people. It's not good for the animals. It's not good for our pristine estuary. So please advocate for the people and say, we do not want this here. Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't get a slip in. My name is Steve Matthew, Preston Lane resident for 40 years. Owner, co-owner and founder of AGP Video, trying to keep this meeting on the air for the last 28 years. And I'm burnt. I'm too burnt to get angry. So I'll be nice. The flickering you're seeing, it's probably the way the only recording that we're getting is going to come out. Okay. I hope it's better. We'll take all the pieces and try and put it together. The electrical has to be gone through in this building completely. It's actually been a problem since day one in 96 when I had to have them take the Coke machine out of here because it was throwing flickers. Anyway, the channel needs to be rebuilt. It's needed to be rebuilt for about 10 or 12 years. All right. We've been through so many city managers that it's never come to fruition. Big access funds that were accumulated for years and got up close to between $500,000 and $700,000 to do it disappeared years ago. The big access fund, I believe, is still in effect and is collecting money. I have no idea what it's got in it now. This needs to be addressed. Okay, that's one of my problems here tonight. My other problem is, like I said, I'm a Preston Lane resident. We now own four properties over there. It's where AGP lives, it's where Nancy Castle lives. We got an empty piece of property and I live at 1650. Our half of the street has not been cleaned. I appreciate everything that the city has done. I really do. But the back half of Preston Lane has not been cleaned since the January flood. Everything we do to clean our properties out gets tracked back into our properties because every time you add water, it's a cake mix. So the mud comes back. This flood mud is incessant. It's a sludge that it can only be removed physically. And it needs to get taken down to that. The street is destroyed. The city really needs to put in more Preston Lane as part of the FEMA claim that they get in, and for both floods, it's totally destroyed, okay? And I understand that, but right now that's the reasoning for not removing the mud, which is not in our best benefit. Thank you, sorry. We did the best we could here tonight. We'll see what we get on the other side.
Good evening, I'm Betty Winholtz. That's not working, right? Okay. Good evening, I'm Betty Winholtz. I also have kind of a loud voice. I want to talk on three other topics, actually, than what's been spoken of tonight, except for one. I want to say thank you for cleaning the storm drains on South Main Street, because even though we're not in the heart of the big flooding area, we do get a lot of water that stays in the streets. And I have noticed that before the storms, staff has been down and cleaning our storm drains so the water can go out. And so that's helped us in the south end of Morro Bay. The second thing is I've seen that there's been equipment along City Park in anticipation of the new bus hub. But I've seen that nothing has happened for a month, even though it's been planned and it was approved a month ago. And I know that we have until Memorial Weekend to help out the Art in the Park people. So I'm asking, is this gonna be done in the next 8 weeks? Is that time to get that done? And then my last comment is about online. It looks like they put out information to kind of like an RFP for someone to come in as a consultant and say, where do we need to help our streets and where does that need to happen? And I'm saying we don't need to hire a consultant. I think we know through our storms that we know where the problems are. I don't think we need to expend, unless this is grant money, but it didn't appear that way, that we don't need to expend general fund money for someone to tell us where our street problems are. I think staff knows where they are. If they don't, I think PWAB and the public can let you know where that is. And so I would encourage that we not be hiring more consultants, but we look at a lean budget. Thank you.
Thank you. AGP, are we still out of video? I mean, out of volume?
Volume, I am completely unsure about. I've been trying to join the Zoom myself, but we have video.
So I've been advised by our city attorney that unfortunately, it would be probably inappropriate for us to take any action tonight on the rest of our agenda, as it's not available volume wise for the listening public at home. And so we're going to be challenged and not be able to proceed. So we're going to reschedule for tomorrow. Real quickly, for those of you who are here, I will ask just for a couple answers. Thank you. Time's up. You know, and I just want to share with those of you that are bringing forward questions, concerns, and comments about the offshore wind and the BESS. You know, please understand that we're engaged. We're here listening to you. We can't take a position on these items when these are projects that are coming forward. They're an applicant entitled to due process, and we have an obligation to allow that. And to take a position right now would be prejudiced, and we would bias our vote and be recused. So, you know, understand that we hear you, and we share the concerns of the community for all projects that come before us. So please know that it's not falling on deaf ears. Two questions or two comments I will just ask our public works director. I'll give him a second really quickly, because we're going to have to adjourn. The bike path and the question on the street consultant, please, Mr. Kwolek.
Thank you, Mayor. Bike path, we're hoping mid-April. We got set back because of the rains. But we are hoping to open that mid-April. The consultant for the local road safety plan, I definitely sympathize with the comments. That plan will allow us to access grant funding. It will help us be successful in obtaining grants from state and other local agencies in the county.
Thank you for that. And also I want to, I was remiss earlier when we were talking about the floods and everything, to also thank the chamber for their participation in helping get the word out, and to all the volunteers, a lot of volunteers that were out there through all these storms from different groups throughout the community, but a lot of the police department volunteers. We could not have done it without the volunteers. So thank you for that. So for those of you who can hear, I'm gonna just confirm with the city clerk. We are going to adjourn this meeting. We are going to reconvene with the meeting tomorrow, 5:30, Morro Bay Community Center. Two of our council members will be on city business. Council member Landrum and council member Edwards will be Zooming in, but we will have a quorum with the other three of us on site. And with that, I will ask the city attorney if there's anything to add, or the city clerk, city manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. To just confirm what the mayor had said about the participation of the public that is listening to the meeting through Zoom and might be listening right now and not hearing me. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. The opportunity for public comment, the city wants to make sure that the folks doing public comment through Zoom have a full opportunity to hear the entire meeting and view the entire meeting. And so public comment starts to lose some of its meaning if you can't hear everything that's going on. So that's the core concern here. And so with intermittent audio and video, which we're getting conflicting reports here on the floor on what exactly is going on. Out of an abundance of caution, there the video audio just came back on. Out of an abundance of caution, I suggested that we continue the meeting to make sure that there's full and robust public participation through Zoom and through any other teleconferencing that's occurring.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeier. Mr. Carpenter, anything to add? No? And then I'll turn over to the our city clerk, Ms. Swanson, to maybe address the location and meeting times. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. we will continue the meeting to tomorrow, Wednesday, March 29th at the Morro Bay Community Center beginning at 5:30 p.m. We will post notices on the entrance of this building and on the city website, City Hall, and the Community Center.
Thank you. I guess we have no audio again. So with that, I'm going to move adjournment of the meeting.
What? What do you mean? We are? They have